see red tally lights in the back, which means it is time for us to get started. I'm Jeff Segpil, CTO for Keycode Media, and thanks everyone for joining us over here all the way down in the theater on the other side of the pool to talk about the new wonders in live production. Let's meet our panelists. Could each of you briefly introduce yourselves and share the type of production work or systems design and support you primarily engage in? John, we'll start with you.
Absolutely. My name is John Porterfield. I'm with Social 180 Group. That's actually my own company. My focus with Social 180 Group, we support lightweight productions, different streaming options. I've been in the streaming industry about a decade now, and had a previous history in high tech. So I focus on cloud productions, remote productions, kind of part of this discussion, and so it's great to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Brett.
Hey, I'm Brett Collins. I am founder and CEO at BC Live Productions. We're a boutique live streaming production agency, and we deal with all sorts of productions in the entertainment space. We also do corporate, esports, and a number of other, try and diversify industries as much as we can. And it's wonderful to be here. Thanks so much.
And that's Tony, in case you were wondering. All right.
My publicist.
Recent projects and challenges. Can you discuss a recent unique show or project you've worked on or are currently working on?
Yep.
And highlight the changes you and your crew faced during the production and implementation. And how did your team overcome those challenges? Brett, we'll start with you.
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that we've seen more prevalently in recent times is vertical live streaming. So something that we have embarked on is helping some esports productions take their traditionally horizontal format and put it into a, you know, try and reach people where they are. So, you know, one of the challenges with that, obviously, is when you look at some of these esports streams, there's a lot of different content that appears on the stream that if you just throw it into a 16:9 mortise and then add, you know, your top and bottom graphics to it, then you miss a lot of the content, or it's too small to read, and that's sort of one of the challenges that we faced. So one of the things that we did is work with the graphic designer who adds a lot of the statistical information for the games on the streams and repurpose some of those modules to sit in those top and bottom sections. So we were able to have our commentators and game callers up the top. We're able to use the bottom for statistics and then kind of keep a really solid, slightly pushed in version of the game in the center. So it's a very watchable experience. And that's just one of the things that I feel like is challenging for vertical production, is how do you get all that information in a really digestible way in the vertical format? So you know, that's one of the challenges we sort of faced and have been dealing with.
John, how about you?
I think I suppose where, like, Brett's coming from, the vertical mark, that whole space is kind of growing and developing. Where I'm focusing on, I think one of the challenges is taking a client where, in my work with using like a Live View solution, where we're doing a cloud production and producing something in the cloud using Live View Studio, where the challenge was they were going to be in a venue in Nashville. And at the Gaylord Convention Center, I think it was. And then, getting everything rigged and ready to go for a 30-minute segment that we were going to do live to air. The challenge for this in their particular setup was we were going live, not only live streaming, but we're live streaming into their OTT platform, meaning it's going live to their network that's servicing people that are on Roku, Apple TVs, Fire Sticks, and things like that. And so we had to do a lot of preparation to make sure we can get that stream ingested into their provider they're working with, as well as make sure the unit and everything else. And on top of it, during that week, AT&T had a major outage in the area. But fortunately, because the type of unit that we're using from like LiveView, they use multiple carriers. So we were pretty solid to even run independently without any disruption to their service, make sure communication. And I think that's one of the areas in terms of the thing projects I work on, and I talked recently at NAB about, was that case study was how we can take these different environments and situations like Brett and his team work on and everybody else and produce that event. But the challenge is always trying to make sure that we're planning, right? And we're understanding what are the risks and things that we need to monitor through the whole team.
Well, the funny thing is, a couple of weeks ago, I was in New York City standing in a room. There's two live esports events going on. And after the tech guy had just explained to me that the network switch is going to be replaced tomorrow, four guys come running in. Holy crap, the switch burped. It just went down and came back up. So both platforms just went down because they didn't have redundancy like yep. you're talking yep. about. So tech trends in live production. What significant trends do you see on the technological side of the live production industry? That's a mouthful. And could you elaborate on a recent tech advancement that's been really beneficial for your shows or your work in general? But show with you.
Well, can I just point out that the epitome of modern day production is right here sitting on John's lap. He's he's monitoring a live stream that's happening right now for one of his
for a client.
For a client, and yep. then he's been doing it all morning.
Yeah.
So, you know, on that note, I think obviously the Remy production is something that we've seen explode ever since pandemic. You know, we've always had for a lot of the corporate clients that we do who are multinational and they have offices all over the world, then we have had elements of that for a long time. But the explosion of it, you know, with the advent of newer technologies, being able to keep multiple feeds in sync, has really allowed for a lot of people to stay home and not have to travel. So, you know, I think even just going back to the previous example that I had mentioned on the esports front, this particular company has leaned so heavily into remote production that they are sending, you know, we're talking about maybe 30 different computers, all of those game feeds, all of the player cams, all the broadcast cameras are all being shipped back to a facility in Dublin where they are live switching and mixing the show from there. Which is an incredible feat, really. Obviously, that's not something that we can put on any regular kind of internet pipe, but I think we're starting to see more and more of leaning in that direction now.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. I think Brett's totally right. I mean, the transition now is trying to bring all these feeds in via whether it's a cloud-type workflow where we're producing something, visual mixing in the cloud, or going to a remote studio. And I think Brett's totally right. I mean, a good example is Formula One. If you look at how Formula One's transitioned over the pandemic and taking their feeds from the race venues and backhauling that into their London broadcast facility and all the different elements that come into that process, a lot of moving parts. And so the challenge is making sure everything's in sync, managing the things when they get out of sync, you know, bring in your commentators. And I think that's kind of the exciting part. Not so much there's a challenge, but the exciting opportunity is to be able to work on some of these activities and be able to do that, right? And when I do a production and we're bringing in a host or a commentator or however we're getting that done, we're really working with them and bringing them in to do a live interview with a local host at a local facility in a variety of different ways. So I think the exciting trend is it's going to progress in terms of remote productions and cloud. The question always everybody comes back to is what's going to stand out on top. And I tell everybody there's a lot of different solutions out there. So whatever you're working on, really focus on managing that well on one particular item. And then testing it as much as possible. Testing is really key to that. So I think that's a really exciting opportunity that I see coming up on the feeds. And the other trend I think we see coming up more is about the monetization, you know, like esports and different elements of sports production. Now we're talking about how do we manage the monetization for the content, ensure the client or the customer is able to get the value of the production, obviously the investment they're making, and using various folks involved in that process.
And I think one of the things I've seen also out there is because this has become more and more solid, people are willing to take certain kinds of risks. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, we're just going to go, the waves have started breaking, so we're going to go do this surf competition in an area where mm-hmm. there is no service of any kind. Because you all have that nailed, right? It's all figured out. Not a big deal. We have no idea how we're going to stream it, but we'll take care of that thing when we get there. IP video standards, it's kind of a weird discussion because you're talking about hybridized environments, really more, I think, for on-prem. How are you utilizing, you know, the good old-fashioned ones of NDI and Dante. Is 2110 beginning to creep into your plans? Have you picked up any insights on integration of video over IP? And what have been some of the challenges you've seen in getting out of SDI, or were you never in SDI to begin with?
I mean, well, certainly we've been using IP video and audio for a long time. And I mean, Dante is sort of has become standard for us over analog for some time now, because it really is very reliable. I think, you know, the 2110 question, it was a much slower rollout than NDI was. So I think a lot of devices have integrated with NDI a lot faster. So it has come to kind of de facto standard. And most of the stuff that we do is NDI based, unless we're going into a stadium or something and we have to interface with like 2110 standards. But it's, you know, as far as the sort of challenges that presents, you know, obviously anything that's IP based is going to have network engineering requirements with it. And particularly if we're going out and doing productions in multiple different places, then every place has its own network standards and security and all the rest of it. So it's hard to go into a place and just expect that you're going to be able to use NDI especially or 2110, especially if you're going to have to traverse between locations on the property or any of that sort of stuff. So whenever it's possible, we try and get onto somewhat of an island from a networking standpoint. So we have our own router, we have our own switches, and we just try and keep everything isolated so we don't have to touch anyone else's network security. So that's one of the things that's a little tricky, and it's important to look out for. And obviously, any sort of network deployment requires some sort of understanding of network engineering, particularly if you're going to have a lot of sources on the network, because you can chew up the bandwidth on those switches really quickly. So, I think that's one of the things that I would take away from the IP standards. I mean, I love it because there's so much more data that it can handle besides just the video or audio traffic. You know, all of that metadata, whether it's tally or whether it's communications or return video, like all this sort of stuff is really handy. So, you know, I think that's the way it's going. And it's going to get easier as we see the standards evolve and have more error correction and being able to troubleshoot within the protocols themselves.
Yeah, I echo where Brett's coming from on that. I mean, I think the 2110 it's progressing, and there's more discussion about that. Obviously, a lot of my experience has been working probably in the early days when NDI was being deployed, leveraging. So for, you know, IP with video was really kind of the natural kind of a process of like, you know, we'll just do it, right? Because in a previous position I was in at a very large church, we were doing a lot of different types of setups or productions and stadiums. And typically we would try to run our own network. I think it's always helpful, kind of minimizes a lot of the risk that we have to manage in what we do there, as well as also just working and how where things are progressing. I think with audio, absolutely, I'm seeing more options come at the market. I've met a few folks over the past several months that were, you know, looking at doing broadcast mix. How do we mix the audio? Have people that do that job really well, right? And can really kind of manage the bring in their expertise to help clean up the audio, right? I think one of the challenges with live streaming in the spaces that I've been in is always trying to make sure we have a really good mix overall for the audience experience. So I think the progression of where Dante and these different elements are coming, I think to what Brad is hitting on too, is to me, it's always about management, right? And it's about the support. And so when we invest our time in working with the various vendors and people that we interface with, we want to make sure that we really understand what it's capable of doing and how in scale, because in streaming, that's really what we're working with. We're talking about quality and scale. And we have to make sure those elements are being addressed as we go along this certain path. So I think NDI is progressing. I have several clients where they're deploying with, whether it's using a RAW system or Blackmagic, whatever they're deploying. And we're seeing more of the PTZ cameras, obviously, with between Sony and Panasonic and various other vendors. So, you know, no doubt that's going to continue on. I mean, I think that was a big highlight at NAB, seeing a lot of the PTZ camera traditional manufacturers and others that are producing that now in that space, and how we manage those cameras remotely. And just getting a demo just the other day, watching where we're controlling the cameras, how can we cut between different elements of those that production? How do I pull that into what I'm doing? So I think it always comes back to that management scenario.
And the thing also with a management scenario is a lot of people who were really good at video aren't really good at network, and a lot of people who came up as really good at networking aren't good at video. So one of the most interesting things I've seen in the last month or so is the Blackmagic 360p. Front of it, it's a router control panel. It's all RJ45s on the back. It's a 2110 router. But I just do it the same way that I've always done video. That's what I think we need to get to the point where let's just put the controls back where everyone expects them to be and have it work with these different protocols. It's really not that difficult, and they're, what, $7,000? Yeah, there's ways to do it. I think we just need to make it easier so we don't have to have such a high bar cost-wise and knowledge-wise to get into it.
Absolutely.
All right. It's not a mute button, it's an off button. I've also seen, it's all right, I work in production, it's fine.
No worries.
Yeah. I've also seen, you know, I've completely forgotten what I was going to say. The mic button threw me off completely.
the ease of
I've
control.
Seen stuff, that's what I was going to say.
I've seen some weird stuff. No, the ease of control is what I was talking about, where you're going to
tail
off of that.
And, I think it's great to have vendors like Blackmagic who are always pushing the bar and always keeping the cost of entry really low. So, you know, we start to see some of these things. The integration that I've seen out of the products that they're releasing, everything talks to each other. Everything is, it's like smart production, right? And although we don't have a lot of that stuff in-house, I think that for a while there, Blackmagic cameras were, it was kind of like almost looked down upon if you brought a bunch of that stuff in there, but everyone's got them now, and that they keep ratcheting up the quality of their stuff too. So it's pretty impressive.
See, and it always gets easier because, I mean, I remember the days of H-Sync and V-Sync and having to have all that plugged into everything everywhere, and it was just a pain. And then just became single cables, and then became single digital cables, and now it's just single packet cables. So progress. Can't get enough of it.
I'm curious, Jeff. So for our audience here, does everyone here work in live production, or who do we have here? Who are we talking to? You work in live production.
So people who work in live production? People who are live production adjacent.
Are people who just want to work in live production and don't currently?
Nice. There we go. All
right, cool. Always.
Perfectly valid. We've kind of touched on this already with cloud-based solutions. Viz, Grass, Ross, they all have cloud-based video switchers, graphics, audio mixing. Obviously, you've been beginning to use cloud solutions, including LiveView's stuff as well.
Yep.
What have been the best experiences you've had with what gear?
For cloud production?
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff, I would lean on the dashboard side of things for like LU Central. Our friends at LiveView have a fantastic, I haven't used the LiveView Studio yet, although I'm told it's great. So looking
it
forward
is.
To
it
trying
is really
that
good.
Out. But
he was told 5 minutes ago before
okay,
we started.
Fun, fantastic. Yeah. But there's some companies have really implemented that side of things really well. So I just, as a producer, as an engineer, I want as much data as I possibly can. I want to know what's going on with the signal. I want to be able to see it. I want to be able to hear it. I want to know what's in sync, all those sorts of things. So I think that some people do that really well. As far as the actual cloud switchers and whatnot go, I haven't used a ton of them. You know, we have, for my particular company, we have Remy Studios that are connected to the switchers infrastructure, which if you don't know, they handle a lot of major distribution for just television events and globally. So we have our physical switchers on that network, it's kind of like we're in the cloud anyway. So we haven't used a lot of the cloud switching technology on our side, but I'm excited to try it out.
Yeah, no, I think certainly my experience has been through different iterations. There's been the elements of it's kind of funny because I tell the people the story when I did kind of a little bit of remote production was I was in a Angel Stadium and I had a live event going on in another part of Orange County. And so my manager was behind me and we're setting up for the event that we're getting. And I said, oh, you know what? I got to get that production started. And so I'm team viewing into the systems in the location, get everything spun up, talk to the director. So for remote production and the elements that I was working on, we were already kind of marching towards that direction. And so the iteration of now moving, evolving to where we're at today, certainly over the past several years and seeing the different solutions and things that are coming out. And I think that's a good point on the different systems that are out there. That's come up in esports events and things that are looking where Ross or Grass Valley or different vendors that are moving into that space. I think from a live view, my experience right now between the two different fronts has been from a live view studio with the producer type setup is fantastic. It's a unified approach to me to do the production. And while it may not be the tier one productions like the Super Bowl and elements that they're doing today, from a tier two, tier three, or the different types of productions, right? We're able to do that. And now we're seeing, you know, like to Brett's point, you know, the point-to-point remote production setups. But we usually, to give one example of where we did a cloud using LiveView Studio, is like bringing in guests remotely into LiveView Studio through one part of the cloud to then take those inputs and take that, we call the program ISO, into a local studio for the host to actually talk directly to that person, like a Zoom call, and be able to talk and capture that event. And I think where we're seeing that going now is more and more of these different products are coming up where we take that and then we go back out into the cloud through another part of the studio where we can then produce and publish live on their platform. So I think there's a lot of different opportunities and I think it's going to evolve. And one of the big part of that process is making sure that you really invest the time to get educated and understand. And I know others are going to get in this space, but certainly for my experience right now so far, and I do a lot of remoting into systems and doing different elements all the time, it's become kind of a key part of my toolkit. So whatever I'm doing, I want to make sure. So like Brett's hitting on with LiveView, between their systems, Ross is jumping in now, you know, and other types of organizations now are jumping into that space. So I'm excited to see where it's going to evolve because I think there's going to be, to your point, other options to evaluate and see how we bring them in. But certainly so far, my experience with Studio has been fantastic.
And it sounds like the key driver there is technology,
yep.
Not necessarily finances. Because
yep.
A lot of times people will be
Kamulik. They don't have more information. This one is
wow. It's the AI.
They found us.
AI Jeff has taken over. Sorry. So it's a technological discussion rather than a financial one.
There we go.
That was fantastic.
That sounds more like me. That makes me happy. Instead of it being a, hey, we need to be able to roll this out like once every quarter, so I don't want to buy all the infrastructure. It's just we're using the infrastructure in the cloud
yep.
because it's the tech that makes sense there.
It's yep. also interesting that there's the evolution to, you know, from being everybody gets on site and does the production together to, all right, everyone just comes to their local Remy studio and does everything from there. And then, you know, now with the cloud productions, like, can we just dial into the, you know, the cloud switcher, the cloud production suite from where you are and sort of do it all from there. Obviously, you know, there's degrees of reliability. And so, you know, to your point, John, it's never going to be for the tier one stuff. They're always going to want either a truck or a fly pack on site because you just don't want to take those chances, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are, you know, that's not the vast majority of productions. The vast majority of them, particularly nowadays, you know, live streaming is so prevalent that everybody, it's almost weird if you're not doing it as a company. So having those barriers to entry be so low, I think is extremely important. Everyone sort of understands that, you know, if it's cloud production, you know, maybe there's a blip and it doesn't really matter. As long as it doesn't affect the overall performance of, you know, you understand what's happening, then that's really the key goal there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think your true point is it is coming from the tech world, from my background in terms of dealing with early days of cloud and everything else. I think what we're seeing now is a software as a service pay as you go model, right? And we're seeing these different elements come in there and how we bring them in.
You might have covered your antenna.
Is that what I'm doing? Oh, there you go. I think it was me. So, you know, oh, there you go.
Keep with that. Keep going.
Okay. We'll keep going. So, no, I agree with Brett's saying. I think it's right. I think, you know, eventually we may get to the point where in that hybrid model of how we develop a tier one production between what is done on site as well as the team being virtually connected into the system and getting to that point. I do see that day coming. It's going to take some time to get there because I think to what you're saying is that we continue to deal with where is everybody residing? How are we going to make sure that everybody is able to do and can participate, really add their value, their expertise into the production? Because that's the key part of this process is ensuring that the right subject matter experts or the people on the ground and in the cloud are able to contribute towards that effort and make sure it goes well.
Definitely. And also to Brett's point, we just had microphones fail. So the cloud just crapped out on us. It was horrible. If we had a cable running to something else, it would be a little different, but we wouldn't have the flexibility we so desire. Before we got started, while we were waiting for everybody to get out of the food line, thanks for coming, there was a little discussion about Remy. I'd like to revisit that. You were talking about you've gone Remy and then it's all this wonderful stuff and you're not using it all the time.
Yeah, well, I think what I wanted to sort of talk about there was it's one of those just because you can doesn't mean you should sort of situations. And I think that there's some, you know, we see it in some times where I feel like clients might be taking a risk they don't need to, particularly if everybody's in the same place. I think, you know, there's some people that get excited about the prospect of building a Remy studio and using it for everything. Which, you know, there definitely is use cases for that, but I don't think it's for everything. And I may be in the minority there, but that's my opinion.
No, I think, you know, the challenge with the Remy model currently, just having some discussions the past couple of weeks with a couple of folks, is how they perceive it, how they see that model to benefit them. But there is a learning curve because the challenge is helping explain people who come from diverse backgrounds of their own experience and how that process is going to work. And so they come to me and ask a question. It's like, oh, let's go do this, right? And to Brett's point, yeah, we can go do that, but we got to make sure we, again, plan, test, we validate the workflow so that we can make sure that it fits into the model they're asking that and ensure that when they, whether it's for a TV broadcast or we're looping something in for maybe our broadcast station or some other an element, that we've kind of worked through the scenarios of what we need to do. I think for me is, like Brett's saying, is the challenge that we've got to think about it from a technical perspective is that we're going through all the steps, just like any production, right? That workflow is still the same process. We've got to think through it and make sure that we're on top of what it is. Identify the risks, right? If something goes sideways, and because this is a live broadcast, we need to have a way of building redundancy into that system so that we can ensure that we minimize any downtime or be able to recover quickly without causing some major disruption for their online audience.
And we also live in a world where a reputation is affected greatly by reliability. Yep. So, you know, yep. When if you have a show that goes down, you're probably not going to get a call from that client again. So, you know, I think when we talk about degrees of reliability for whether it's, you know, and this comes back to what I was saying, like it doesn't always need to be Remy, because the thing is that whilst it does make things cheaper and easier in some senses, it increases your risk to other things. And you need to take more time in some instances to be satisfied that you have that same level of reliability in a Remy setup than you would have if you just plugged everything in and you were on site.
Yep.
So, but you know, it's kind of the way of the future. And the more that we have coverage on cell networks, the more that we have, you know, companies laying fiber all around the place, the more redundant pathways we have for these things. So you know, it's becoming more and more a doable prospect.
No,
I agree. I think to your point, you know, Jeff, is that, and he's saying like a key point, the transition that we're going into in an IP-based video workflow is that network topology. From a networking perspective, we're having to manage a technology and how we, whether it's a cell-based or how we drive those feeds throughout to create the connection option for the networking side of the fence. So I think he's hitting on a really good point, is that that's an important factor. We have to make sure from the switches or whatever that infrastructure looks like, we have to kind of work through that and make sure that we identify, is this the right setup? And if it is, okay, let's just make sure we go through that. But I think that's one of the challenges in the past few years of where we have gone with the virtual events and everything that we're doing now, is that that model of the individual of us that are sitting behind the scenes are now having to think from a technology perspective, how do we make sure that we have the, even myself, do I have the right person alongside with me as a co-pilot, right? Think of it that way. So that we can make sure that we've really identified any potential issues for the client, so that from a visibility perspective, absolutely, the brands that are out there and the way people are leveraging these solutions, we've got to ensure that we make sure that we really support them.
Because using technology for the sake of using technology, it's great for telling stories in rooms like this and rooms like over there. But if you fail, you get egg all over the face. You're not getting that off.
Makes for a great story, though.
It does. It'd be a cool story, bro. I mean, in this room. But if it doesn't, if it goes down, they're not interested in what your cool story was going to be. They just want they want their message getting to their audience. That's all they really care about.
But it is exciting, and I'm every time that there's a new step, a new part of evolution, it always excites me to figure out how can this make my life easier.
Exactly. So, speaking of making your life easier and things we don't normally think about and talk about in live production, lighting, microphones, intercom, what technical advances are you seeing there that is of interest or possibly you're beginning to implement?
Well, I mean, I think I mentioned before that, you know, it's not really a lighting thing, but certainly the metadata that you can carry over these IP protocols, things like Tally and whatnot, that, you know, would have been an extra either cable or obviously if you're working with a SMPTE backs or whatever, then that stuff just kind of lives with the camera. But it's bringing those kind of technologies to to more budget friendly productions, and so I love that sort of stuff. As far as intercom goes, I think the pandemic really pushed us into the world of Unity. I don't know if you used that stuff before, but Unity Intercom over the cell phone is super useful. So, I don't know. There's so many things, but what else? What do you got, John?
Let's see. So, Unity, I think you're right on the comms. It's interesting. I sat on a panel with a few other folks about a year and a half ago in Stream Media West. And I think out of all of us on that panel, people asked, like, I think, or maybe the moderator asked us, like, what was an item that we most needed? And I think comms came up and somebody was with me and asked for afterwards. And I said, why is that such an important factor? Well, you know, we got to communicate in real time, right? If you think about it. So Unity, we see people using Discord and ways to bring people in that's budget friendly. LiveView just launched called Audio Connect, which is similar to Unity. And if you want to check out with LiveView, you can see that again is similar to what Unity, but again, facilitating a party line of some sort, right, for communications for the production teams. Again, you can have it on your phone. So I think comms, the metadata to manage lighting, Tally, I think other items that have come up for me has been people asking, and there's a lot of different solutions here, remote, like queuing the script in front of the host, right? And doing a live event. So I'm anxious to see some of these technologies, how they're going to integrate more effectively to help manage some pretty common tasks that are important in production, but we're now having to do that remotely. And there's a lot of different solutions out there. And what I'm always looking at is, let's bring down the complexity for us as well that have to do that work, right? Because at the end of the day, is like we can manage a lot of different elements, but we can also get lost in the process. And that's very easy to do. And then obviously that's not good for the client because then we're trying to figure something out. So it's important for us, I think, as we work with these systems, is to make sure that the people that we partner with, the vendors or whoever we work with, that I work with especially, is asking them about support, how it works, how are we going to do this. And so, but I think, you know, there's a lot of different ones. We're seeing the tally lights. I mean, at NAB, I mean, they talked about, you know, Bird Dog had some solutions and different people and doing remote. So I'm excited to see where it's going. But like anything, I want to, like, to Brett's point, we got to make sure we validate how this process and simulate the scenarios. Because to me, for me in particular, testing is just paramount to make sure I know the behavior.
Yeah. And monitoring as well. You know, I love the fact that with, you know, NDI, and I've seen some monitoring solutions now, it just makes it super easy where you don't have to worry about the same kind of routing commands you would have to have previously done. So I find that fascinating. I love Unreal Engine too. I don't know if you guys have played around with that, but I think that there's going to be some pretty crazy advancements in that sort of realm as well.
AR, XR.
That's going to be, the Unreal Engine and being able to drive certain elements of productions now, take it to another level. We were talking before we came out here on the panel discussions I was involved with, and you can go on YouTube and look at the Office Global Hours show. The exciting part about that show was using Unreal Engine, bringing in Zoom, bringing all your panelists or your hosts, right, from all over the world. And the person sitting in the chair in Las Vegas in the booth, they're looking at all the, and they see all these people coming in asking questions to see a new level of interaction and engagement. And I think that's what people often ask about driving content and bringing more value in the investment they're making in the production, is how do we drive better engagement? How to drive more value? Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of another area, that immersiveness of where we see trends developing, is how do we capture that experience in different ways, to your point.
Yeah. You know, with all these technologies that are coming out, obviously we just always want to make sure that we test everything very thoroughly, because there's nothing worse than sort of reading the spec on the back of something and then trying to implement it in a live production.
That didn't work.
Yeah. Yes.
Two of the interesting things that I've seen most recently, one, PoE plus powered lighting fixtures. You go into a CEO's house, you don't want to, you know, start blowing circuits. PoE light fixtures, one switch, but it goes with you when you leave. No fuss, no muss. And then using game controllers for camera control. I saw that at the show. Someone said, well, yeah, you just hook up an Xbox or Nintendo controller to it. I was like, I hadn't thought about that, because it's, I don't operate cameras on the day to day. And I'm used to Zoom. There's focus, over here. I'm not even a PTZ.
But you are a gamer. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not a gamer. It didn't occur to me. And then someone said, "Yeah, it's really intuitive." And folks of a certain hair color apparently work great with it. So I'm not the right hair color.
But you know, so the fun part about that is seeing that come up, right? As a concept. When SpaceX launched the Starship out of Texas, the first big launch or the second launch, one of the guys I follow on YouTube, what about it? That's their YouTube channel. What was interesting part about it was they rigged up the PTZ camera near the Starbase. And so he's controlling the camera as the rocket's going up, right? Again, you're bringing a new level of experience for people to interact with that live event. They can't be there, but they can see that. He was totally psyched about that whole process. He says, I can't believe I'm being able to control this camera with a gaming controller, right? And so you start to see these little things that we take for granted every day that are in one marketplace, but we're now bringing into production and be able to support that, I think is always, that innovation is where I'm getting on, maybe heading on, is I think is always a fun part.
Absolutely. I mean, we're going back a few years now, but during pandemic times when we had to take a game show that was traditionally on a stage and figure out a way to do that remotely while the host of the show was in her basement in New York and we had all the contestants here in LA, being able to reframe those shots, we had to set up VPNs and have have our remote controllers in LA and all of that stuff is becoming so much easier now.
Yeah, I think that's a key part of some of these elements now. When you talk about lighting podcasts, another example, they're become the new TV show circuit, as we all know. People tune in podcast every day. And so from an automation perspective, I'm able to meet some other, this is kind of the fun part about my job, meet some other folks that are actually creating automated podcast studios. Somebody remotely controlling the lighting, you walk in the room, push a button, right? Again, what we're trying to do is bring more value to the client, to the people who are paying money to accomplish a certain element that's important to them, right? And it may be something that people don't often think about every day, but it's an area that I continue to look at, and it comes back from my tech background. I think the innovation component of what we're hitting on is paramount to where we all work together as a community to kind of help drive these things, standards and different parts that you're hitting on.
I think the other fun thing is going to be when they finally figure out what the cheat codes on those controllers are going to do. Wow, we're done with the production. But also, speaking of done with production, we've run out of time. So, John, Brett, thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely.
And
thanks
the audience, thanks for coming on in.
Thanks,
and
thank you.
And if you're up for it, stick around for the next production or the next panel, which is about the editor's lounge, and we're getting into post-production. It's after production. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for watching Broadcast to Post. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast to receive future episodes. Follow Key Code Media on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to receive news on additional AV, broadcast, and post-production technology content. See you next time, folks.